Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised.
Bad guy, asshole, people call me lots of names. Damn, I laugh so hard because they're all the same. Pack my ammo, trigger happy feeling grace. Can't lie, man's won't ever change. God sent me to piss the world off. New man, just admit it, you mad. Crucify me because the world's soft.
Yes, sir. What is up, everybody? It is your boy, Weed Too Deep. Look, if you're wondering why on the video, like the intro ends on YouTube and I just stare at the camera for like 20 seconds, it's for whatever reason now, whenever I start and click record here on this software, it takes a minute to play a 50-second video. So I don't know why it happens. So I just wanted to address that so that you don't think that I'm just purposely staring at the camera like that. But anyway, let's dive on in. I'm Weed Too Deep. For those who are new, we are here to address wrestling from an analytical perspective, a more casual perspective, and we're here to have a good time. And for if you're new, you came at the proper episode. These Friday episodes are the episodes where I talk about things that are happening in and out of the ring, and I rant on them. I just give my full-fledged opinion. On Tuesdays, me and my co-host, DJ Wavy D, have an episode. You can go and watch the one from this past Tuesday on the YouTube channel, or if you like audio, it's also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts are the two big platforms, but anywhere you can get an audio podcast, it is more than likely there. And so let's get into some of these rants that we are going to do. The first thing we are going to talk about is Miss Mickey James, who on the last Sunday, so about a week ago, on Sunday's episode of LFG, which I'm going to open up and say that I don't watch anymore. The reason I don't watch the show is, one, I can't watch it because I don't have A&E, and two, just based on like some of the clips that I've seen and other people talking about it, it just seems like it's more like match-based and very little storytelling being told. And so if that's the case, I have zero interest in watching matches of nobodies who I don't know without a story being told, right? And so I don't necessarily care about the show, but I do want to talk about this quote that Mickey James said to one of the female wrestlers. I can't think of her name right now. It's the one from Ukraine, about her outfit. And it basically says, it's very frustrating when women go out there and wrestle and all I see is their ass and I can't look past it. It's all I see. It's very distracting. Now, she said more about it, but that's the part of the quote that people are talking about. I want to talk about this because I've gone through sort of a range of feelings on what Mickey James said in this clip of this episode. I've gone through a range of feelings. At first, I kind of agreed with everyone that she was overly judgmental, or a little bit hypocritical, and so I kind of agreed with everyone, but then I sat back and do what I always do, and I think about this logically and analytically and looked at what she actually said. So what she actually said, because I don't think anyone actually did this. What did Mickey James actually say to this woman? What she said was, Because a lot of people are saying, like, oh, she's hypocritical. I know Mickie James ain't talking. Look at Mickie James. Didn't she come up playing these more sexualized roles? Right. But what I think Mickie James is saying is that me, Lita, Trish, Tori, Stacy, even to an effect, AJ Lee, Kelly, we went through this in the Divas era, and we worked hard to try to make it so that these future generations didn't have to only get over based on sexuality. That when you then look at the modern women's wrestling and you recognize that there are very talented women in this industry who could get over on their promo work or their in-ring ability, but instead decide to take the easy way out and solely get themselves over by the way that they present to themselves, you know. And there is 90%, if not more, of the independent women's wrestling scene is, you know, women just dressing as little as possible to get over. I believe take a shortcut to get over by presenting their bodies as the product that is being sold, which is why a lot of these women in the on the independents end up making Fansly's accounts or OnlyFans accounts, because they understand that there is this subsection of the fan base that would pay for it. And we've had these conversations before, right? I don't necessarily think that this is a good thing for humanity in and of itself, but we'll save like the philosophy part for a different conversation, right? As far as wrestling goes, I'm a big fan of women's wrestling. I don't have a problem with a lot of how women dress in this industry. I think what Mickie James was talking about was this woman literally was wearing lingerie. And I think what Mickie James was critiquing was we in the Divas era worked hard so that you could just come out here and play a gimmick and you didn't have to come out and dress in lingerie. That you could come out here and present yourself in a way to where you get over solely because of your skills in the ring, not because of how you look in the ring. I think that's what Mickie James was trying to point out here. So I kind of agree with Mickie James that I feel like so let's give an example of someone like a Rhea Ripley, right? Who is uber talented. She's actually who I'm going to talk about in the next segment here. I got a question about Rhea that I want to ask. But Rhea is seen as uber talented, decent on the microphone, could get herself over promo-wise, could get herself over in-ring ability-wise. Yet it appears that Rhea is at times, I'm not lying, it appears that Rhea plays to this gooner crowd of these sexual deviants on the internet who goon after her, and she plays and to that crowd. Whereas early Rhea Ripley, what got Rhea Ripley over with me was that when I first saw her in 2017-ish, right, in the Mae Young Classic, was that she was 21 and she was better in ring and on promos than most of the women at the time in the wrestling world. And it was the in-ring ability that got Rhea Ripley over with me. What I feel now with Rhea Ripley is she's playing into this group of sexual deviants who view her as perfection. And she plays to that crowd and she pulls the pants up a little bit so that her cheeks are showing and all of that, right? And some people may not have an issue with that, but I do think what I will also say, because you know, it's also been said to me, like, well, aren't you the same person who says that sex sells? And it may be interpreted that, but what I was saying is that being sexy sells, that it's okay to present yourself as sexy. What I don't believe is that sexuality or lives, and we'll talk more about this when we talk about AEW, because there was another example of what I'm talking about that happened in AEW this past Wednesday. But I don't believe that sex acts or, you know, threesome kisses like AEW did with Tony Storm, Mariah May, and Shirakawa, Mina, right? I think it was her name, right? Mina Shirakawa. Like, I don't think that sells as well as people want to say it does. I mean, and if it does, I think that there's an issue with that, just personally. I think there's a difference between sex acts and being sexy, right? You could be sexy but still be modest. I think of someone like a Bianca Belair, who I find absolutely attractive, like stunning, like almost close to perfection. But I also think that she's also very modest at times in how she presents herself in the ring. Like, she's not out here shaking ass and doing all the stupid shit like Lola Vice and Nikita Lyons and all of that, right? I think that there's a difference between being sexy and selling sex, right? And sexiness does sell, but I think that there's a line that you cross over to selling sexuality and sex acts that makes the program a little bit closer to X-rated, and that's where I think that we need to stay away from in the wrestling industry, just personally. So let's transition. You know, I mentioned Rhea. So the question I want to ask about Rhea Ripley is Rhea Ripley really as good as she's been hyped to be? And this comes off of the last two matches she's had for the title against Io Sky have been pretty sloppy. I'm just going to be honest. There are spots that she either was late to the sell to, or it just looked messed up, and Io Sky is, you know, unanimous among people in the industry who watch and who perform that, like, Io Sky is one of the best in the business at doing what she does, right? And for her to come in and automatically just come, like for Io to be in the ring against Rhea, and I get that there's a difference in styles, and I get that live TV have mistakes that happen, but when it starts to become consistent, the question has to happen, like, is there a reason why Vince McMahon didn't push Rhea Ripley the way Triple H is pushing Rhea Ripley? Now, this is not like Rhea, hey, well, you know, I'll go ahead and sort of preface, you know, and advertise the end of the show. Stay around. The very last segment is going to be a tier list of where I rate the women's roster from WWE on the We Too Deep scale of attractiveness or scale of hotness. And we'll break down the scale and I'll talk about each wrestler individually. So I'll break down my rating of Rhea Ripley and stuff there. But as a performer, outside of the looks, I mean, she's decent on the mic. I'll give her that. I just, her in-ring work hasn't impressed me the last few months as maybe it did when I first saw her. And I think a lot of it, I'll be honest, a lot of it is the look. I think the same thing that the uber goth gooners on the internet find her attractive looking the way she does, I think her look is also what drives me away from saying that I like Rhea Ripley. Because while I am a fan of goth girls, I think that she's one of these women that I think the image they're trying to present with her is, you know, fuck around and find out. But how it comes off at times is more of like unbeatable crybaby type. Like it feels like, and maybe it's just Rhea Ripley fatigue, because we've had basically like the last 2.5 years of major storyline in this division being Rhea Ripley. I'm tired of seeing Rhea, to be honest, and I think that's part of it. I don't know. I'm not saying she's awful. I start to notice some trends with her In some of these matches, like when you go up against the best, and right, and so some people, you know, may try to justify it by saying, well, she doesn't get in the ring all that often. Well, she's at live shows. Like, I don't think the not working live show thing is an excuse, because we see pictures of her at live shows all the time. She was just smacking her ass in the on the turnbuckle with a kendo stick at a live show on the European tour. And so we know she does these live shows. Like, ring rust or not being in the ring all the time, I don't think is an excuse. I don't think it's one of those things where, like, they're presenting her as like a Stone Cold Steve Austin type character, where like, if you come after me, I'm gonna come after you type thing. I think this is just Triple H views Rhea Ripley positively and as one of his favorites, and so he's going to push her because he trusts her. And I think that's how Triple H books. He only pushes those that he trusts, even if it means that it's not the best. And I think at times we just have to sit here and wonder, like, is she as good as we're being told? Because a good producer will hype up a character, and their entire job is to make, especially a babyface like Rhea, is to make you like that character, right? But I also think, I'm going to call balls and strikes evenly. And, you know, there was a spot, I'm not going to talk about it with AEW because there's other things to talk about in that segment, but there was like a spot in AEW where Marina Shafir was trying to do like a power bomb or something through a table, of Willow. And it didn't come off correctly. It looked like they hadn't practiced the move. You know, this could have looked better if you had a performance center, wink, wink. But it looked amateur, right? And I posted this, and immediately, like, the responses in that Discord was, well, yeah, they're professionals. They're supposed to be able to do this at a high level. Well, we gotta be fair with that. That when Rhea Ripley botches a move, and it's not just the EO match. There was a match she was in against Liv Morgan where Liv, like, Rhea was outside the ring. Liv had slid out of the ring and, like, hit her in the back of the knee, but Rhea didn't sell it. Like these are professionals, right? Especially when you're at WWE, you're on the main roster on Monday Night Raw. Like, you're the top of the top. You're the top 5% of wrestlers in the world in terms of ability and talent. Like, that's what you want me to believe, right? And so you're supposed to be the best of the best. And when, like, if you're watching a movie and a line gets botched in the movie, or a stuntman fails at presenting the stunt correctly, in the movie, you would look at it and be like, well, that guy sucks. Well, that's essentially what wrestling is. It's a movie. It's these guys are live actors and stuntmen and women, right? And so when Rhea doesn't do a stunt correctly, it makes the product look amateur, right? We have to be consistent among the product. Just because I like WWE and I don't like AEW doesn't mean that I can't be consistent and call out balls and strikes on both products, right? So Rhea is one of those where, like, I'm not going to completely write her off. I just question whether or not she's really this top dog that she says she is. She's lacking consistency in the in-ring performance aspect to me. All right, the next segment, I mentioned on Tuesday with Wavy D that I thought that the last 2 weeks of build towards WrestleMania have been pretty decent from a WWE perspective, much better than what we've been getting the first, like, 8 weeks of this build. And so here's my problem. I still think it's too little too late. I still don't think we're at a place where I can say that the build of the entire show is exciting. There's elements in a couple stories that I'm excited for, but I think as an event as a whole, it's still lacking. It's too little too late for this Mania build for me. I still have to say that we went through, at this point, 2 months of build from Royal Rumble till now of this build towards WrestleMania with very little happening in the 8 weeks that we've had so far, right? And so I don't think that there's enough time to completely change the way, unless something very drastic happens, whether on SmackDown or, you know, in the next 2 weeks of product going forward, unless something very drastic happens, I just don't see a world and where this build, you know, is good for me or not. And so I do want to know your guys' thoughts on that. What do you feel about this build, right? I also mentioned on Tuesday, Dante, from formerly of Stash Club, mentioning something about, like, he feels like Gunther has to win. Well, I actually have to agree with him. Am I the only one here in the wrestling community that feels that Gunther has to win, but also wants Gunther to win? And let me tell you why I want Gunther to win. I'm completely tired of this manufactured yeet bullshit, right? The Yes Movement wasn't like the Yes Movement was organic. It started with the fans, right? It almost feels like to me that the yeet chants were started by WWE and are being marketed, and that Jey Uso only has this spot because of the marketing value he brings the company. And that Jey Uso, and I've been saying this, I've said this since he won Royal Rumble, once he gets the title, if he gets the title, the reign is going to be bad. And I know Wavy D is sitting here, you know, he has said on the show before that it can be a transitional reign. It only has to be like a month or two. Well, here's my problem. I have a big issue with taking the belt off Gunther, who's finally come around and playing a heel gimmick that we can build behind and actually a casual audience can get behind and boo and understand the dynamic of this heel Gunther. Like, I feel like we've hit this different strut here with Gunther where, like bro's at the top of his game right now. And I feel like to take the belt off of him, to put it on a man that you're only going to give a month title reign to for marketing, I just don't like those optics when, like who are you going to put? You're going to put it back on Gunther? A part of me wonders if the Jey Uso spot was not supposed to go to someone like a Bronson Reed or more particular. I think that Jey Uso's spot was originally supposed to go to Ilya Dragunov. I 100%, like, I thought of this because news came out that Dragunov is scheduled to probably show back up on television around the beginning of September, which is very perfect timing. If you play out the PLEs coming through for Dragunov. And so I feel like with that news and looking ahead what we could do, I feel like this was supposed to be Dragunov's spot so that you can get Gunther versus Dragunov at WrestleMania. And what I think you could do is have Jey lose this match, right? Have Jey completely done with this match. Maybe he then goes back and partners with his brother, and they could tag team and do all that again. I think that's where we need to go, just personally. But I also think, like, what if Gunther wins, right? And I always ask, like, what's next? You could put him immediately in a feud against, you know, Rusev just signed with the company. You could have him come out and challenge Gunther. You could have, you know, some other, like, upper carder, you know, type guy, like a Finn Balor or a Dominic Mysterio. Maybe even like a Bron Breakker have an opportunity. So let's say like Rusev is the next guy who gets a feud with Gunther. Well, that can happen at Backlash. You could then do Saudi, I think, is going to be the June show. You could do Saudi with it being like Gunther versus Goldberg, which I think is going to be the match. I'm going to be honest with you. Goldberg's final match taking place in Saudi. Big money match, Goldberg versus Gunther. where Gunther again retains. You then go into Money in the Bank, where Gunther could take a month off at Money in the Bank. I think the Saudi show is going to be Night of Champions as well. And it's going to be the only Saudi show this year, from what I'm being told, or what I've been reading on X. And so then you can go to Money in the Bank in the beginning of July, beginning of August, you have, or Gunther could take off. Beginning of August, you could have SummerSlam, right? August 2nd and 3rd is SummerSlam, where you could build some other guy, Bron Breakker per se, or somebody to fight Gunther. You can then go to August 31st, which will essentially be September's PLE if they do it like they did last year, which is Clash at Paris. And that is where you can have Dragunov come out at Clash at Paris on August 31st to set up a Gunther versus Dragunov feud that starts at whatever October's pay-per-view is, whether it's Bad Blood again or whatever it's going to be, which then leads into War Games, where they could have a match number 2, which then could lead into like a Royal Rumble type feud, or you could say, you know, push off where you see what I'm saying, where like match 3 or something of Dragunov Gunther could happen, this trifecta where Dragunov finally goes over could happen at Rumble, right? And then you can have Dragunov go into Mania next year with as champion, or whatever you want to do. Like I think, first off, I think a Dragunov Gunther hits better at a SummerSlam or Royal Rumble type event anyway. But I think there's storyline there that you could build to with Gunther that I don't necessarily think you have with Jey Uso, just being honest with you. On the other side, you have Cena versus Cody, and I mentioned this on Tuesday, and I want to expand on it. I think there's one thing missing from this feud at this point, right? And that thing is The Rock. Now, I'm recording this before SmackDown airs on Friday, right? So who knows? Maybe The Rock shows up, or maybe The Rock shows up on the road to complete this journey to WrestleMania in Vegas, right? Now that we're back in the States. Who knows? But I feel like that the Cena-Rock connection, why it happened, what's the purpose, how did it come together, that's the one thing missing from this feud, from the feud. Yes, that's the one thing that I do believe is missing. And to me, this is the number one most important thing we needed to know. Right? Like, I don't care that John Cena is blaming the fans. I don't really necessarily care about that. I don't care that Cody Rhodes disgusts him. Like, it feels a little bit elementary. What I really want to know is, John Cena, why did this make you sell out to The Rock, right? Because that's really the storyline going forward, right? Because how this should be booked is that John Cena wins off of Cody. He wins 17. He goes to do Backlash, which is in St. Louis, which I would immediately do Cena versus Orton one final time. Have Cena win that match, right? Go into to Saudi, and eventually you'll get to a SummerSlam, where I would have, eventually the whole idea would be Cena versus Rock at SummerSlam, where Cena beats The Rock. And this whole story is that Cena realizes that he doesn't need The Rock to maintain the title, that he's done serving The Rock, because the one thing that The Rock promised him he got. So that there really was no purpose for any longer for him serving The Rock, because he got what he wanted, right? And I think that's also how you can turn The Rock back to being a babyface, by the way. So that The Rock can come out and not have to continually break kayfabe. And then he could be friends with Cody Rhodes. And what a turn of event, even if Cody and Rock then team up or whatever. Who knows how you could go through that. But I just, that's the one thing missing is what is the whole purpose of the connection with The Rock? Because that's really the longer play story that all of us are interested in. No one really cares about Cody versus Cena by itself. What we really care about is Cena Rock as a partnership. Right? That's what we really care about is why is the partnership here? What's everyone's role in this? Is there a third person? What's that? What's the point? Right? Next little thing I want to talk about is some NXT thoughts. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't watched this episode of NXT. I've just seen clips of it. And so the first thing that I want to talk about is whatever happened, just a random thought, whatever happened to Bayley versus Roxanne Perez? Like, did we just drop this story? Like, this should be on the stand and deliver card, right? This should be on that card, right? The next thing, and this is really, the next thing that that I want to talk about, and I hardly ever rant on a booking decision from Shawn Michaels, right? Because I think a lot of times Shawn Michaels is very logical in how he books. Bro, Shawn, I got to call you out on this one. I got to be fair. I got to call you out on this. What in the blue hell was the entire purpose of making Stephanie Vaquer a double champ, celebrating with an entire episode dedicated to how good Stephanie is by defending both championships, only for the next week to strip her of the damn North American championship? It makes zero sense to me, Sean. What the hell are we doing? Makes zero sense. Now we get a six-woman ladder, and I'm sure these matches will be fun to determine who's in it, and this match itself would be fun and all of that. But what are we doing? Like, why couldn't we just say Julia, or why couldn't Julia just lose the North American Championship and put over Fallon Henley again or something? Like, you had I feel like you could be more creative in how you booked this. What I think happened is that Julia is actually injured. This surprised everyone. So now you had to put the main belt on someone credible. And really, at that point, the only person credible to be Julia is Stephanie Vaquer. And so with that, now you have to find a way to strip her of this other belt. And what I feel is rather than take the creative booking method, you just chose to strip her of it and then run a ladder match. I'm not the biggest fan of this decision, if I'm being honest. Next thing that I want to talk about, as far as NXT, the only last thing, again, I haven't watched a full episode, but I know Ricky Saints won the Men's North American Championship off of Sean Spears, was attacked by Ethan Page, and the show ends with Tony fumbled chance again. And then, so now all these AEW fans, because Dynasty is this week, all these AEW fans are saying, when Swerve wins the title, we can go out there and be like, Hunter fumbled. Guys, let me tell you something. Hunter wasn't involved in the booking of Swerve Strickland. So if you want to go out and chant Hunter fumbled, he's going to laugh his ass off, just like I would, because that makes zero fucking sense. Vince was the one that fumbled Swerve Strickland. Stop trying to be fucking edgy for once. Please, for the love of God, AEW fans, stop trying to be fucking edgy. Because that's what I feel. That's what they want to feel important. They want to try. They want to make themselves feel important. That this dumb niche group of wrestling fans who pop for everything, who don't understand wrestling really as much as they think they do, and don't understand storytelling at all. They want to be popular. They want to be the cool kids, and they want to try to do everything WWE does because they think that it's edgy. And guys, let me tell you this right now. It's not edgy. It's cringy. That's what it is. But let's talk about AEW for a minute. So the first thing that I want to talk about is this report that AEW has over 500,000 viewers of their product on max on top of the 500,000 people. So basically equaling about 1 million viewers of their product. And guys, all I see is propaganda. Propaganda. Shout out to Tom McDonald and Dax with the song Propaganda there. That I poorly covered, but that's all I see. All I see is propaganda from BJ Bethel and Dave Meltzer and Sean Ross Sapp and all of these people co-signing this obviously debunkable bullshit. There's Max doesn't even know the number. Like, if you click on the article, it says that there are top execs in Warner Brothers who don't even know the numbers on Max. How the holy fuck am I supposed to listen to whatever source BJ Bethel has? And again, none of them ever share their sources. The source is just, trust me, bro. Trust me, bro. We got some sources. Bro, this is poor journalism. It's propaganda. And there's no way. There's no way. Show me the numbers if you want me to believe it. That's all you got to do. Show me the numbers, because I'm not going to trust you, because this is solely just propaganda. That's all this is. Propaganda. That's all it is. All right, so I'm going to save my dynasty predictions for Sunday. That's going to be most of Sunday's show. We are in April, so this is the first Sunday in April. So you're going to start getting Sunday shows, right? I'm going to save my dynasty predictions till the Sunday show going into dynasty, because I'm sure there's some stupid bullshit is going to happen during Collision that I'm not going to watch, but I need to have happen before I can fully make my non-biased, uncaring predictions. I got to get all the information out that I can look at before I make predictions, right? But what we are going to do is the Owen Cup is coming around, right? So we are going to break down the Owen Cup tournament. We're going to start with the women's bracket. So the first matchup on this bracket is Jamie Hayter versus Billy Starks. A match that they just ran on a Collision, by the way. So why the holy hell do I care about this match? Billy Starks will win this match in my prediction. We then have Chris Statlander versus Thunder Rosa. By the way, the winner of this of both of these brackets get a world title shot at Double or Nothing live in Glendale, Arizona. I do think that Chris Statlander will beat Thunder Rosa in this tournament. And so the semifinals on that side of the bracket will be Billy Starks versus Chris Statlander. On the other side of the bracket, you have Harley Cameron versus Athena, the ROH women's champion, which that is obvious as hell. You're going to get Athena to win that match. However, I would really love if Harley Cameron somehow won this match. I would really love it. And then the other match is Mercedes Moné versus Julia Hart. And you'll be a damn fool if you believe Mercedes Moné is going to allow herself to lose this match. So I do believe we'll have Athena versus Mercedes on the semifinals. So Chris Statlander versus Billy Starks. I think we will get Billy Starks in the finals. And I think we'll get Mercedes Moné in the finals. And the finals of this tournament will be won by, in my prediction, one Billy Starks, where Billy Starks will then go into Double or Nothing to fight Toni Storm for the championship, and some sort of feud where Athena gets back at Mercedes, right? And then we can build towards All In, where I believe it will be Athena versus Mercedes and Thunder Rosa versus whoever the women's champion at that point is, which I do believe will still be Toni Storm. Either way, I don't see the winner of this bracket winning the championship at all. All right, let's move to the men's side of the bracket. So on one side, you got Mark Briscoe versus Kyle Fletcher in the most obvious fucking predictable match in the world, and that will be Kyle Fletcher winning. Why the fuck is Mark Briscoe in this tournament? This dude's in tournaments every single time they have tournaments, and he loses. He does absolutely nothing to earn his way into this damn tournament. Every time I see Mark Briscoe on the TV, he's going on a promo, or he's losing a match. The fuck is Mark Briscoe doing in this tournament? That's crazy. You're telling me that the tournament prize is a world title opportunity at the biggest show you run all year. At Double or Nothing. This is sort of your cornerstone show. And you put Mark Briscoe in this tournament? Let's go. You got Hangman Page versus a wild card, which God knows who that's going to be. More than likely, it's going to be Josh Alexander, coming in to lose his first match. Either way, I don't think it will be Josh Alexander, by the way. I think it'll be someone returning to the product. Not quite certain who that could be. I also think it could be like a Cedric Alexander, who, again, makes zero fucking sense to have him come in and debut and lose to Hangman Page. Either way, whoever's fighting Adam Page is going to lose. Adam Page, we're just going to go ahead and say this. When it's Adam Page versus Kyle Fletcher, Hangman Page is going to the finals. Well, let's go to the other side. We'll start at the bottom. You got Brody King, who finally won a match on a Dynamite, finally, only to face Kanusuke Shukatuki Takashita, take a shit, however the fuck you say, Kanosuke Takeshka, so that y'all aren't offended. In a match where Brody King should win the whole damn tournament, because he's one of the most over-organically guys on the damn roster. But you're going to have him lose to Takeshka, of all people. And then the final match of this first round is Will Ospreay versus Kevin Knight. And if you've never watched this product before, or hell, if you're a casual AEW watcher like me, you might be having the same question. Who the fuck is Kevin Knight? And why all of a sudden has this man been pushed to the fucking moon when 7 days after he signed the dot on an AEW contract, he's in a tournament to win the biggest prize in the damn company? Who the fuck is Kevin Knight? And why is he facing Will Ospreay? And get this. His match against Ospreay, this first round match of a tournament, is on the damn pay-per-view on Sunday. Because that makes total fucking sense. This makes total no sense at all, if we're being honest. So let me ask a genuine question. Okay, Will Ospreay's winning. Your final will be Will Ospreay. Will be Will Ospreay versus Hangman Page in the tournament finals. And Hangman Page is winning this match, which tells me one thing. Swerve Strickland's winning on Sunday. Because you're going to get Swerve versus Hangman Page at double or nothing. That's going to be the match. That's going to be the match. It's going to be Swerve versus Hangman at double or nothing. But I have another question. You put a Mark Briscoe, who's done absolutely nothing to be in this match. You put in a wild card for whatever reason. You put in Kevin Knight, who just signed with the company 7 days ago. You put them in this tournament to battle for an opportunity at the biggest title in your company. But your number one draw in the entire company is MJF, and he's not in the tournament. Bobby Lashley should be in the tournament. You could build a story, you know, actually tell a story for once of tension between this group where the finals could be MJF versus Bobby Lashley. Where opportunity at the world title, sure, that's for up for grabs, but you could up the stakes where MJF says, hey, Bobby, if I beat you, I'm in the Hurt Business or Hurt Syndicate or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Bro, this wild card's probably going to end up being Jeff fucking Jarrett. This makes no sense. Where is MJF? Where is Bobby Lashley? Why are they not in this tournament? Apparently Mark Davis is hurt, so I'm not going to ask about him. If we're going to have other champions like Mercedes Moné or Athena in the women's, why is Kenny Omega not in this tournament? Why are there zero stories being told? None of this is even any entertaining at all. Wait a minute. Pause. This is the winners get a... Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. The final... Let's read... See, James told me the wrong information. He told me that the title match is at double or nothing. The tournament final is at double or nothing, which is what I thought. The winners get the title shot at All In. Guys, that changes See, my entire prediction just changed because I should have just done my own research. James told me false information. No, this is obvious. What's going to happen? I got to change my prediction for the women's. For the men's, it's going to be the same. Hangman Page is winning the tournament because he's facing Swerve at All In. That's going to be what happens. The Cowboy is going to win in Texas. But I got to change my women's prediction now solely because James told me the wrong information. Mercedes still beats Julia Hart. Athena still beats Harley Cameron with Mercedes beating Athena to go to the finals. Same on the other side, Billy Starks versus, but here's the thing, it's going to be Billy Starks versus Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa's going to the finals, so it's going to be Thunder Rosa versus Mercedes Moné at double or nothing, where Thunder Rosa will win to get her title opportunity at All In. That's exactly how this is going to be booked. See, James gave me the wrong information because he told me that the title opportunity was at double or nothing. He lied to me. Sorry for that confusion. Probably should watch the show and do my own research. That's on me. But you get it. Thunder Rose is winning the women's. Hangman Page is winning the men's. Highly fucking predictable tournaments here. And that's that. The last thing to talk about with AEW is that Darby Allin has finally scheduled his ascent up Mount Everest, which will be April the 15th. It'll probably take him a few days to get up to the top, if he even makes it, by the way. Which means that by the end of this month, I expect to see AEW doing a 10-bell salute for Darby Allin. Because this is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen anyone do. I'm sorry. I get people have thrills and are seekers and they want to get this adrenaline. The amount of danger climbing Mount Everest is, for every 10 successful climbs, there's one unsuccessful death where someone dies hiking Mount Everest. And I got to call James out again. He said, well, Darby survived getting hit by a bus. Motherfucker, getting hit by a bus and climbing Mount Everest are two very, very, very different things. Darby Allin is small, and I get he's a daredevil, and I get he's probably been training very, very hard for this. But training and the actual thing are very – this is stupid. Tony Khan should have talked him out of this when he first even pitched the idea. The future, because it appears like Darby Allin's going to be one of the pillars that this company is built upon when he returns back to the company. The future of your company rests on whether or not Darby Allin can survive an ascent up Mount Everest and then to come back down. First off, I don't know if you know this, but Mount Everest is covered in shit because there's no toilets up there. I don't know if y'all know that, but Darby Allin, I don't want you to die, but this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. All right, so we're going to do a little react to that segment, and then we're going to do my little rankings tier list. So my react to that is a article by E Wrestling News. The link is in the video description or the show notes if you're listening on audio. And the article title is several wrestlers. I want to read the actual title. It's loading. I don't have it pulled up. Give me a second. Three ex-WWE superstars featured an extreme far-right rapper music video. Right, so the video is a song called Can't Cancel All of Us by Tom McDonald. For those who don't know, Tom McDonald is the guy who does both of my intro track songs, the Tuesday and the Friday-Sunday show songs. Are done by Tom McDonald, by the way. Now, here's the thing. Tom McDonald is not extreme right or extreme far right on a political. Here's the thing. Wrestling fans, of course, pause for a second. This is just a personal comment to me. Of course, Ryan Clark wrote this fucking article. Excuse me. Back to the podcast. Wrestling fans who don't understand politics need to just leave politics alone. They just do. Just leave politics alone. Tom McDonald is not extreme far right. He's just not, you know, the traditional wrestling fan, like uber liberal type supporter, right? Right. I don't care where your politics are, right? But basically what happened was in this music video, Tom brought together a whole bunch of cameos of famous people, actors, comedians, political pundits, other people who have been canceled. And so Lacey Evans was in the video, Enzo Amore was in the video, and Scotty Tuhati was in the video. This is just a stupid article to write about. So what I'm really reacting to is just how dumb these motherfuckers are and how slow the news day is. That you have to write about an article, a political article, because you disagree with the dude's politics and the people involved's politics, that you have to try to get some clicks to spread some hate on these people. It's crazy. I don't care what your politics are. Everyone deserves, and this is what I talk about when I say double standard, right? Because when you have someone like Enzo's not even super conservative. Enzo got canceled because of the false sexual assault or whatever allegations, right? And Lacey Evans was because she questioned you know, the autism spectrum and how everyone's automatically like on the spectrum apparently now, like, or something like that, right? I don't know what Scotty Duhati did. Didn't really do a lot of research. My whole point in this is that it's stupid This is even an article to be written. Let people have their own personal opinions. If you disagree, move on. As for like Tom McDonald's music, I'm going to continue to listen to it because I like it. But yeah, Tom McDonald is far from being far right extremist, right? Bro just makes music for more conservative minded individuals, right? And if you didn't listen to the song, you wouldn't understand it. It's stupid. I don't even get it. I don't get it. Like, if you don't like politics, stay out. Don't write political shit. Like, it's stupid, right? Anyway, we're going to move on. I hope this actually shares properly on the screen so that we can do the last segment here, my rankings of WWE women wrestlers on the We Too Deep. So you can actually do this. This is on tiermaker.com. Just search We Too Deep as spelled on the screen. If you're an audio listener, it's WETOODEEP, all one word, like all no spaces in it, right? To search that, it'd be the one that pops up. Rating WWE's women's division on the We Too Deep scale of hotness. So let's first off break down the scale. So I've always said on a scale of 1 to 10, a lot of people, a lot of men don't have an accurate scale, right? And a lot of women definitely don't have an accurate scale. So we're going to go from the bottom, a one. A one is ugly, right? You're just not attractive. You're ugly, right? Two is cute. Three is average, right? The average woman is a three, right? Don't let these women gaslight you into think that they're better than a three. A four is attractive. Five is beautiful. Six is hot. Seven is gorgeous. Eight is sexy. Nine is rare. 10 is perfect. Let me tell you guys something. 10 definitely does not exist. Don't let these women gaslight into thinking that they're a 10. There are no such thing as 10s on this planet, right? Nine is rare for a reason. Very few fit this category, right? Most women, the majority of women fit somewhere between 3 and 6 on this scale, right? A majority of women fit between 3 and 6 on this scale. There are very few people who reach 9, and there's some who are 7s and 8s. Ones typically don't exist. There will be one on this ranking, though. I can't say they don't exist, but they are unicorns. They exist, but are very extinct. Most women fit between 2 and 6, with the remaining, the higher level 1% being 7s or 8s, maybe a 9 or 2. Like, that's the top 0.0001% being an anyway. So we have the women's roster here. I don't have everyone from NXT, and I don't have really everyone on the roster, but the pictures chosen are from the WWE website roster page. I think they're in alphabetical order as listed on here. So we are just going to start with that. Instead of dragging and doing all of that, I've actually already done this. So let me pull up my already tier chart. Since I already broke down the tier chart for you, let me pull up the picture. Of my tier list for you. Alrighty. Here we go. So let me pull up my tier list again. I already completed. As you see, what can you see here? Majority of the women fit between 3 and 6, right? So let's start at the top. Oh, again, no one perfect. At rare, you got Jakara Jackson and Maxine Dupree. Those are my 9s, right? Those are like the hottest of the hot, in my opinion, right? Very rare. You hardly see them. Not much to really break down. That should be very obvious to some people, right? Sexy to me, right? We got Bianca Belair. We got Jade Cargill. We got Sol Ruka. And we got Stephanie Vaquer. I don't see any of this as controversial. Others might. More controversial as we get down closer to average, right? If we get to the gorgeous category, that's Dakota Kai, Lacey Evans, Kalani Jordan, and Tatum Paxley. Again, everyone has a different view of attractiveness, but that's where we're at right here. We get to a six. This is the hot category. That is Ava. I know this is controversial, but Ava is better than just attractive. Ava is a good looking individual. I'm tired of everyone hating on Ava solely because her dad is The Rock. So many people hate on her and say she's ugly. She is not. She is in the hot category. Next to her is Julia. Next to her is Jasmine Nix. We got Carmen Petrovic, Kiana James, and Zaria. If you've ever seen Zaria without like the gimmick makeup on, she's really a really, really beautiful, and I guess we could say hot woman. We got, in the beautiful category, I got Alexa Bliss, Bayley, B-Fab, which I know is controversial to some people, Kairi Sane. I just realized Io Sky wasn't on this. Where the hell, why was she not? Anyway, Kairi Sane, Lyra Valkyria, trying to make out who this, oh, let's see, can I zoom in? Who is that? Oh, that's Roxanne Perez. Roxanne Perez and Stevie Turner and the attractive, the fours, we got Cora Jade. I've always said this. Cora Jade's boob job is too big for her body. Her boobs are bigger than the rest of her, and it's uber unattractive. I'm just going to be honest with you. Fallon Henley, Ivy Nile, Lash Legend, Lola Vice. Let me tell you about Lola. A lot, and this goes for a lot of other people on this list underneath her as well. Lola Vice is only attractive to men who like big asses. And I've always told you guys, I'm not an ass or a tits person, right? None of that matters to me. Like, outside attraction doesn't really mean much to me, right? I think Lola Vice, she has a pretty face. She has a cute voice. Like, I'm a voice person. I'm like a legs person. Like, I like long legs. I don't care about the, right? Lola Vice's ass is, there's a difference between like jiggly, like fat, like with an F-A-T, and like a thick, where it's just like, it's like, I like firm muscular asses over jiggly, like fat asses, right? Beside her, Raquel Rodriguez, and then Rin Sinclair. In the average category, Becky Lynch. And we're going to go back up for a second, because I called in the fives, I called this B-Fab. That is not B-Fab. That is Izzy Dame. I do want to apologize for that. I don't see her on TV that much, but so that's Izzy Dame in the fives next to Bayley. We got Becky Lynch, B-Fab, Candice LeRae, Gigi Dolin, and Jada Parker right next to him, next to her. Both of them, same sort of thing as Lola Vice. They got big asses, and these men just like big asses, right? And so, if we're being real, they're not. I mean, I will say this with Jada Parker. She got a slim waist, which I do find attractive. But I don't know. She's not one I see on TV that I immediately am drawn to. Like, oh, she's uber, uber attractive, right? Jordynne Grace is average looking. Just being on it. Kaden Carter. Excuse me. That's Katana Chance. Katana Chance. Liv Morgan. I know this is uber controversial. But let me, guys, go to Hooters. Go into Hooters. Count the amount of waitresses, take pictures of them, send them to me. Please don't bother them. But I promise you, you go to your local bar, whether it's Hooters, we got a place here called Twin Peaks. I'm sure you guys have those as well, or Hot Shots, or go to any bar. You will find eight women, and I say this a lot, that look exactly like Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan is average. She is not more than anything but average. Next to her is Naomi. This is probably the most the most offensive or controversial one, Rhea Ripley is average looking. And a lot of it, yes, is the tattoos. That takes away a lot of it. I told you this. If Rhea Ripley got rid of all the tattoos, she'd be sitting right up next to Zarya or Tatum Paxley in the six or seven category. But Rhea Ripley got the tattoos. She dyed her hair black. She tried to look like Chris Motionless. I'm sorry. She's mid. She's average. Shotzi Blackheart, for most of the same reason. Fia Hale, one, again, similar to Liv Morgan, you could find the blonde, the small blonde on at any Hooters or bar that you go to. There's nothing really exciting about Fia Hale from a look standpoint or attractiveness standpoint to me. Tiffany Stratton is average. I'm sorry. It is what it is. She was pretty to me. Like I think if you got rid of the boob job, she probably would be on the five level, if I'm being honest. But the boob job just sort of threw it away to me. I think she got some lip filler and stuff too. She doesn't look attractive to me anymore, right? She's just average. Your average blonde white girl, right? And then Zelina Vega there. In the cute section, we have Alba Fire for self-explanatory reasons. Charlotte Flair, I don't know what the hell she did when she left and came back over the year and a half that she was gone. I don't know what the hell she did, but I used to find her somewhat attractive. Not anymore. Charlotte Flair is a two. Chelsea Green is a two. Now, here's why. Sort of going back to the last segment. When a wrestler puts out there their personal opinions on matters like politics, I told you guys, from a look standpoint, Chelsea Green is, yeah, she's a looker, right? She is cute. But once I get to know you personally, and I know your personality, and I know who you are and what you stand for and all of this, that goes into my attraction of you. I don't find Chelsea Green attractive at all, solely because she's a loud mouth. She comes off ignorant on Twitter. I'm just going to be honest with you. That's just how I feel. We're not going to get into those issues, but I lost a lot of like respect for Chelsea Green and from an attractiveness standpoint. You got to also understand that a lot of this comes into like, what do I think of your voice? What do I think of your, you know, do you have long, thin legs, thin waist type thing, right? You know, so next to her is Caden Carter. You got Meechan. You got Natalya. Those are self-explanatory. Zoe Stark is self-explanatory. Piper Niven and Nia Jax are self-explanatory. And ones rarely ever exist, if ever. I typically live by the principle that ones and tens don't exist. But in WWE, there is one, and that is Shayna Baszler. If you find her attractive, you got some issues. That's all I'll say. So there's that. That's the podcast, by the way. Thank you all for watching and listening. I hope all of that played out well for you on screen. With that being said, my name is We2Deep. I'll see you on Sunday with another episode. We will be doing Dynasty predictions. Until then, y'all have a great rest of your day.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.